Moncrief on News Talk.
Right now, Jonathan DeBrucker Butler has joined us for a look at news stories coming in from around the world. Jonathan, how are you today?
Tom, how are you getting on?
Very well indeed. You're starting off in Kenya, which seems to have a very interesting relationship with alcohol.
It does. It doesn't have a good relationship with alcohol. I suppose over the years of doing stories from Kenya in this particular slot, sort of three things come to mind: police violence, corruption, and problems with alcohol. In particular, a thing called changa, which is kind of their local hooch, right? So we've done stories in the past where people have died because of consuming that, right? You know, dozens at a time. And so that's what makes this particular story rather bizarre, because in Kenya, there are proposals now that have come out to control the sale and consumption of alcohol, right? So these were unveiled on Wednesday. And some of the measures that they're looking at bringing in is a ban on purchasing alcohol in supermarkets, a ban on buying it on public transport, which seems fair enough.
Seems good.
Won't allow online sale or home delivery anymore, and they won't allow celebrity endorsements. The one big one for me would be the fact that they're thinking about banning it in restaurants as well, which seems bizarre. That's talk about shooting yourself in the foot in terms of tourism point of view.
But weird.
Yeah, that's what they're looking at. And then they're looking at raising the age from 18 to 21. So there's a few things in there that aren't great, probably. A few things in there that are okay. Now, it should be emphasised that at this point, these are just proposals, right? So these were unveiled, as I said, on Wednesday by the National Authority for the Campaign Against Alcohol and Drug Abuse, okay? And when the criticism against these measures came out, because as you can imagine, there was a lot of it, this organisation straight away came out with a statement and said, look, this is just a roadmap, and any proposal that requires legal backing will undergo a thorough law review process.
Okay.
So kind of saying, giving these proposals and then distancing themselves, saying, look, this is just out there for debate. Right.
Flying a kite, I think we refer to that as in this country.
Kite flying indeed. But what's strange to me about this, and what's been pointed out by people who work in the licensed trade or the licensed side of it, is that this kind of thing, like, for instance, okay, banning it on public transport makes sense, but banning it in supermarkets and restaurants and only allowing it in bars and off licenses will throw people right into the arms of the people who are making hooch. And I think it's one of those things that is going to cause more problems than it will solve them.
Obviously, it's something, as you say, in the past, they've had a huge problem with.
Yes.
Something like 1 in 20 Kenyans addicted to alcohol.
That's what they
sounds
say.
Fairly massive,
yeah,
doesn't it?
It's a significant amount. But there's always those stories coming out, those headline stories where dozens of people die because of the, you know, the consumption of hooch, and that's always something that grabs the headlines. I mean, they've tried things before. There was back in 2023, we actually covered a story where the vice president at the time had proposed an idea where, in the center of Kenya, where this problem seems to be most widespread, where they'd only allow one bar per town, which seemed like a reasonable idea until dig down and you find out there's 17,000 boozers or something like 17,000 places that sell alcohol in Kenya, employing 100,000 people. So not everybody was happy. So that was scrapped straight away.
They seem to want to take a real broad stroke approach to the whole thing, don't they? It doesn't seem to have any kind of just normal nuance. Why would you close down all your nice bars?
Exactly. Indeed. So it remains to be seen how many of these measures will actually be put in place.
Watch this space. Over to Ecuador, a lot of violence.
Yeah, Ecuador was one of those countries where up until recently we didn't talk about much, certainly in terms of violence related to drug cartels. It's only recently that, you know, the deaths and the amount of violence has gone up. So its position between Colombia and Peru sort of made it a perfect place for drug cartels to say, oh, new markets here, in order to, you know, that we can get our goods through, and the police and, you know, the authorities in Ecuador are a little bit naive. So we've got an opportunity here, and they've taken full advantage of it. The result of that is that there's been a huge increase in violence. You know, in 2018, there was 1,000 violent deaths in the country. That has now gone up in 2023 to 8,000. It's quite crazy.
That's
so in the region,
incredible.
They've got one of the highest death rates, murder rates in the region. And on just last week, 17 people were killed in an attack on a bar. This was in a small town called El Empalme. It only has a population of about 40,000 people. And it's about 160 kilometers north of Guayaquil. Now, the reason I'm mentioning that is because Guayaquil would be mentioned quite a lot when we talk about gang violence. That seems to be, it's a port. It seems to be where a lot of the activity is happening. But this was 160 kilometers away, relatively small town, 17 people killed in a drive-by shooting. Crazy stuff.
The nature of the drive-by is kind of, it's fairly jaw-dropping, isn't it? You're talking trucks opening fire. I mean, really, there's no, again, I mentioned broad strokes before, but it seems like any target will do.
Yes, absolutely. Now, obviously, these the individuals involved were trying to target people who were inside the bar. You'd suspect that's the case.
Yeah.
But it's basically, let's make sure we get them. And if anybody else
doesn't
goes
matter.
With them, it doesn't matter. So that's what seems to be changing here. And it's, as I said, the last 5 or 6 years where this has got out of control, really.
And this is one particular criminal group called Los Lobos.
Yeah, Los Lobos.
Prior to being a criminal group, they were a really good little five-piece band.
Oh, really?
Yeah, back in the day, Los Lobos.
Okay, well, I'm sure they
will. Will the Wolf Survive, I think, was their hit
That's
the
what
day.
It is. That's what they are. That's what they call themselves, Los Lobos. It means the wolves. And they are, you know, competing with another group called Los Coneros, I think it is. For control of drug trafficking and everything else that's going on in the area. Now, the government, it should be said, say that they are having some success against these gangs.
Do they ever, though, really?
Well, I mean, they say they've arrested 16,000 people in the last year or so. Interestingly, the current president, who did win a second term in April, which is, might be an indication that he's doing something right, he's been pushing now for expanding powers and giving more power to state security forces, specifically to address the situation around the crime. And we're going to, actually, the next country we're going to have a look at is...
That recurring theme of presidents pushing for expanded powers. Mm. It's right across the world at the moment.
Yeah.
Not to mention America, but also El Salvador.
Yes, in El Salvador. So we've gone from Ecuador to El Salvador. And it might be a bit of a message as to, okay, you can get rid of your gangs and that's great and everything, but what do you get in return?
El Salvador seems to have been at a crossroads for a very long time.
Yes.
It seems to be the poster boy for dysfunctional states and everything else forever. So I haven't really been following how far away from that they've come.
That's an interesting way of putting it. They've had problems for a long time, right? Yeah. And then back in 2019, you had a guy called Nayib Bukele, right, who came to power. So he was only late 30s when he came to power.
Yeah.
I think he's Iranian stock originally. Very frank in his assessment of what needed to happen in El Salvador. And when he was first elected, people liked what he had to say. And he put his money where his mouth was, right? So in 2018, again, sorry for all these stats, but I think it's interesting to have a look at them. In 2018... the murder rate in El Salvador was 53 people per 100,000. Okay. Now, it's under 1% here. Yeah. It's under 1 per 100,000 here, as far as I know. It teeters around 1. Now in 2024, it's at 1.9 per 100,000.
So almost comparable with us.
Yeah, okay. Now,
okay, right. And for a country which had an absolute banditry record.
This was a place where TV stations were invited into prisons to interview the leaders of gangs. That's how much power these guys had, okay? It was absolutely all over the place.
Sure.
And he wasn't going to put up with it anymore. Now, the downside of it is that what you've got now is a guy who last week, through Congress, made a constitutional reform and essentially can put himself forward to be president or to be elected president for the rest of his life, right? So he's got rid of term limits, and we know, because we've covered these things a lot, when term limits go, it's very hard to get them back. Now, Bukele is saying, oh, I've no intention of running for the presidency next year. I think he's brought the date forward as well. It was supposed to be 2029, but he's bringing it forward to next year, or maybe the year after. He said in an interview in Time magazine, I spoke to my wife about it and, you know, she's not going to let me do it anymore. Kind of jokingly dismissed it. But this would suggest that he's going to go for as long as he possibly can. And I would also say that the deal that he's done with Trump, with the prisons, is very important, because he's basically saying, OK, the biggest watchdog in the neighbourhood around human rights, inverted commas, isn't going to be looking at me. so I can go ahead with this because I've done that deal with them.
Okay. 2% of El Salvador's adult population jailed.
Is in prison. Yeah. Now, not all of them should be there. That's what human rights organizations would argue.
That's
but there's a lot of people.
Portion. It's like being in prison is their new industry, isn't
it? Yeah, it is.
And they'll
take
Americans as well. Sure. Yeah. You know, bring them here.
Absolutely.
That's what we're good at. Hard for them, if you have a guy who's come and made life, you know, that much more safe, not to think he is the guy we need to keep around.
He's very popular. So it is very difficult. I mean, if they can turn a blind eye to the one or two people, I'd say they'd look at it this way. You know, I've seen interviews where they're talking about, I don't really care. My kids can go out and play basketball and I know they're going to come home.
Yeah.
So
worth its weight in gold. Right then, on to a German zoo controversy. A lot of controversy.
Yeah, a lot of controversy around this. So this is a Nuremberg zoo in the south of Germany and they have killed 12 healthy guinea baboons there.
Yep.
Okay, on last Tuesday. So the officials say they had no other option because they were unable to transfer the animals to other zoos and contraception measures had failed. And they said basically the compound that these baboons were housed in was made to cater for 25 and they had 40. So they had to get rid of some because they were vying for space and they were fighting with each other and they were injuring each other.
There's no other zoos around the world would take on an old
apparently not
baboon.
That's what they say. Apparently not. So they got rid of 12 of them. Now, they have emphasised that none of these were pregnant females and they weren't animals that were under scientific observation. So they're kind of saying, oh, well, these were disposable. But as you can imagine, there was an awful lot of people who weren't happy about that.
Well, you see, when you put them in a zoo like that, where you make this big hullabaloo about preserving them and keeping them safe and everything else that goes with it, then if you then suddenly turn around and say, we've had 12 of them taken at the back, you know, it's obviously, it's not going to go down well.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So Pro Wildlife, an NGO, is one of several groups that have filed a criminal complaint against the zoo for violating animal protection laws, and there's other groups that are looking at suing them as well. I believe there was even a criminal complaint made against the management as well for effectively murdering these animals. How far that will go, I'm not sure. But yeah, sad story, and there was lots of protests and the like, so it got quite a bit of coverage.
The protests sound like they're fairly out of God control. Gluing themselves.
People
to the zoo entrance.
To the zoo entrance, yeah, and 7 people were arrested who broke into the zoo on the day.
Did they say how they killed the 4 baboons?
I think they were shot, and I know that they were fed to other animals.
That's a fairly brutal example of the old.
Yeah, they seem to sort of say that that was kind of a virtuous thing to do.
Yeah, this is what would happen in the wild.
Yeah.
It's what they would have wanted.
So there you go.
Holy moly, God. I say their numbers be down now.
Visitor numbers.
Yes, indeed. Right now, not a combination I would ever really imagine. Spain and the Democratic Republic of the Congo and Barcelona. And sponsorship. They're not things you'd put together in one sentence normally.
Not necessarily. So when I saw it first, I was saying to myself, you know, Barcelona doing a deal with the DRC is a bit of a strange one, but that's what's happened. A partnership to allow the DRC put their logo on the back of a training shirt is going to cost them 44 million euros.
So bottom line, a country are sponsoring a football team.
Yeah, exactly.
Has that ever happened before?
Yes, well, it has. Like I know you're a Man U fan, aren't you? But you'll know your great rivals, Arsenal, have Visit Rwanda emblazoned all over.
I actually didn't know that.
Oh, did you not?
No, I didn't.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
I kind of glaze over when Arsenal get mentioned, so I wouldn't notice.
My children would not be happy.
What goes on in that camp? I don't want to know.
So anyway, you're aware of Arsenal.
Yes.
So they've had a sponsorship deal with Rwanda, Visit Rwanda, since 2018. So have PSG and Bayern, actually, as well. So it has happened before where countries have sponsored teams in a kind of a capacity is promoting it in a tourist capacity.
Tourist,
if you like.
Yeah.
And that's what the DRC are doing here as well. They're saying that the deal will promote the place as a place to visit and as a place to invest in. Now, the DRC has had its troubles, but it is
a
big country.
It has. Group recently seized large parts of it.
Yes. So, I mean, they've only just signed a deal with Rwanda, a peace deal with Rwanda, after a civil war. Well, not a civil war, but a war was going on in the eastern part of the country that allegedly involved Rwanda, which Rwanda denied. But that was getting quite a lot of coverage. So it could take a while for the DRC to kind of change its image and to you know, entice people to go and visit the place. And I'm not sure actually that the slogan will do them any good.
What's because the slogan?
The DRC, or Democratic Republic of Congo, Heart of Africa. But when I heard Heart of Africa, I immediately thought of Joseph Conrad's
book,
me
too.
Heart of Darkness,
yeah.
Which of course is set in the Belgian Congo, I think, originally.
Yeah. Are there not laws, or I don't mean laws, but just rules around this? Because, you know, sports washing is a huge issue. Can any country just suddenly wade in and say, you know,
it's such a difficult area, isn't it?
I mean, Belarus, you know?
It's such a difficult area. It's so hard to know, especially in this day and age, because countries seem to get away with whatever they can get away with and still be involved in international sport. Others don't. So it's a grey area, Tom.
Very good. Visit Rwanda. That's going to be on the sleeves of their shirts.
Yeah, it's going to be DRC, Congo, Heart of Africa, and then Visit Rwanda is going to be on the sleeves of the Arsenal shirts. That's
right.
They have that.
Rwanda was involved in a kind of boat people kind of controversies at times as well, wasn't it? There was immigrants going to be sent to Rwanda.
Oh, yes, that was the UK.
That's a whole different
thing. Very different.
Really
Visit Rwanda. Gone now, thankfully.
Thank God for that. Coming up in the next few days, the 80th anniversary of the Hiroshima bomb.
Yes, so that's on Wednesday, and then Nagasaki a few days after it on Saturday. So a timely reminder of
great
the damage.
Great documentaries, they're just truly jaw-dropping, aren't they?
Yeah, staggering. What was it, 200,000 people, I think, were killed in Hiroshima alone? I'm not sure about Nagasaki. Yeah.
The details, they've maps and they've reconstructions of the city as it was afterwards. They're jaw-dropping. It's great stuff on TV at the moment.
Okay. I must look further into that. I saw a snippet last night, all right, of two people being interviewed who had survived, but I need to look more into it. Then on Thursday, the new tariffs on imports on foreign goods into the United States will take effect. That's Thursday. Everybody's looking forward to that.
Will it be that straightforward? Will it just, you know, Friday?
Is anything straightforward with Donald Trump? He might even change his mind. You never know. And then Friday, speaking of Trump, the deadline for Russia to agree the deal with Ukraine, who he's not very happy with at all, Tom, as
not
you probably
happy
know.
At all.
That happens on Friday. So we'll see
all
what
going
happens.
Off, as always. Jonathan, thank you very
Thanks,
much
Tom.
For that.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.